welcome everybody. This is Mordechai Plotzka driving home from Elizabeth, New Jersey. Well, actually to Elizabeth, New Jersey from Brooklyn, New York. And I have, so this week's parsha is Parsha's Bo, some recap recollections and thoughts, insights into this amazing parsha. You know, we opened up by discussing the difference of Moshe Rabbeinu in relation to the Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and that they accepted everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, but Moshe Rabbeinu seems to... Okay, so Moshe Rabbeinu clearly has a back and forth with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a correspondence, so to speak, and which is unique from the Avos. And now we see a furtherance of this with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's relationship to Klal Yisrael strengthening in Parshas Bo, because unlike Parshas Va'era, where we were able to witness seven makos that were consecutive one after the other, in Parshas Bo, we see that there's a little bit of break between each maka. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu reminds us, as Hashem had commanded us back in Parshas Shmos and Va'era, and now again in Bo, Dabar na v'azim v'yashilu. First thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us is to borrow from the Egyptians. Several questions on this. We know that the Egyptians took our money. They took, you know, Mashakana Ebekana Rabo, and they treated us as slaves, as we were. So they took what we had, you know, brought down, at the Rechush that Yaakov Avinu brought down to Mitzrayim, and all that wealth that Yosef had accumulated, and they took it as their own. And now we're being asked to borrow? It doesn't make any sense. We should really be just taking what we want. And the second thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us to do is HaKadosh HaZalachem Rosh Chadashim, that you will now sanctify the new month, which means that unlike Beza Sefarno and the Ramban, that unlike in prior circumstances, the master told the slave when he or she would go to work and what exactly they would do, now, all of a sudden, we are dictating time. We are explaining, we are communicating among ourselves when Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and all the Yom Tovim, the Moadim, and Shabbosos, and all these things will occur based on when we declare the new month. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, that is for you, Rosh Chadashim. You will declare the new month, and within that month will come all of the beautiful holidays that accompany it. And the third thing, which is probably, or even perhaps on par with the other two, is that we were instructed to bring the Karban Pesach. Now, that obviously took a great deal of faith to do, because we were literally taking their God, the sheep, and slaughtering it. But it wasn't enough that we slaughtered it. We then took it and splattered its blood on our doorposts, and so that God should know to pass over our doorposts and smite the firstborn of every Egyptian household, which, if you think about it, it's the equivalent of burning a Nazi flag in 1932 in Kiel, Germany, where across the street was the foundation or the headquarters of the Nazi Party. It is unthinkable. It is non-pragmatic. It is non-starter. It's non-sequitur. It is a quid no pro, or whatever they want to call it. It's just not a conversation that you want to have. It's certainly not actions you want to take. And what do you think will be the result? You will just simply inflame the population and rise them, and they will rise up against you. But Hashem knew all of the things that would hold the Jewish people back. And so Hashem instructed us to do these things. And each one of these things, borrowing from the Egyptians, declaring the new month, as well as sacrificing the Karban Pesach, all speak to psychological freedom. It's one of my favorite topics that when I go away for a Pesach program, I always focus on this. I give a shiur for about an hour. But, you know, given the limitation of time, I go into this in far more greater detail. But for the purposes of our shiur, it's so important to understand this and to internalize it, that in order to behave like a free person, your mind has to be there first. Your mind has to be able to accept the fact that you're no longer a slave. Your mind has to be able to accept the fact that you are free to use time at your disposal, how you wish to use it, and, of course, to promote that sense of independence and to promote that sense of security that you have within yourself for the betterment of not only your family and the community, but for Klal Yisrael at large. And I think that there's a fascinating story recorded in the Gemara on Sanhedrin Daf Sadi Aleph Amud Aleph, which would be Sanhedrin 91a. And I'll share that story with you, and then we'll call it a night. There was an individual called Gvia ben Tisisa, and not many people are familiar with him. He was, as the Gemara records, a hedgeo chabano. He was a simple commoner. And the Gemara records a fascinating exchange that the Egyptians came before Alexander the Great. As the Gemara refers to Alexander Mukdam, the first Alexander the Great. And they said that the Jewish people borrowed from us gold, silver, klei kesef, klei zahav, u'smalos. They borrowed from us silver, gold, and garments. So tnu lanu, they should give it back to us, whatever they borrowed from us. So Roman court sent a delegation to the Jewish camp and said that the Egyptians have created a claim against you. So how do you plan on responding? And the Jewish people had 3 days to consider a response, and they were very nervous. Our ancestors were terrified. What are we going to say? How are we going to say it? And how are we going to make this go away? So as they were debating among themselves, there stood a man named Gvia ben Tisisa, and he told the rabbis then and the leaders that he plans on representing the Jewish people. And he said, if I win, then Taras Hashem is menatzeach, and if I lose, then you'll send the real delegation of Lomdei Torah and community leaders, etc. And they realized they had nothing left to lose but to send him along. And he comes down to Rome, and he presents himself on behalf of the Jewish people, and he says as follows. The Egyptians have brought a claim from the Torah. I bring a counterclaim. My counterclaim is that Ba'avon Devinu Osam, it also says in the Torah, that we were enslaved Arba Me'ashana for 400 years. Tenulanu Schar, give us back our remuneration for all those years of servitude, and come up with a number, and then we'll talk about it. So if you think about it, I was trying to figure out what type of figures he was really thinking about. If there were 600,000 men aged between 20 and 60 at Mamon Har Sinai, at Mount Sinai, then that means that they represented a population of approximately 3 million people in total. And we know that v'chamushim alu v'bnei Yisrael, that there were 20% of the Jewish people left, which means that there were 15 million Jews in Mitzrayim, which leaves 12 million that were buried during the Makom Choshech, during which time Moshe Rabbeinu, Chacham Levi Kach Mitzos, was the one who was bringing up the bones of Yosef, Alei Shor, while the Jewish people were burying their own dead. So that means that we're talking 15 million people at the time of Exodus, and now scale that backwards. So obviously we're talking about an astronomical number, an astronomical figure. So the Gemara records that the Egyptians had 3 days to consider the counterclaim, and after 3 days, Batku v'lo Matzu, they searched and they didn't find them, and that year was the year of Shemitah, just like it is now in Israel, and they were able to seize the land, which was filled with vineyards and vegetation, and it was a tremendous simcha for the Jewish people. And then the Gemara goes on to describe other stories in which Gvia ben Tisisa took a leadership role, and the outcome was successful. So we ask ourselves the question, what is the answer to this, and how does this relate back to the parasha? In order for us to behave as a free person, we need to borrow. If we were just to simply take, we'd be acting in a slave mentality, taking without asking, or kicking down doors and saying that there's a new sheriff in town because your revolver is a 44 Magnum versus the other one that's a 9 caliber or whatever it is that people want to talk about. That is just simple foolishness, because the strength of the individual is not predicated on the size of the weapon. If the strength of the individual is predicated on the size of the character of the individual and how the person, holds himself. Is he a man of integrity? Is he a man of honesty? Is he a man of truth? And so All of these things are characteristic of a person who also goes ahead and says, I understand that you have your Da'at Amos. I'm asking permission to enter. And so when the Jewish people came and asked the Egyptians if they can please borrow gold and silver, you know, Rashi says, you know, they were so amazed that they found chen ha'am, that they found grace in the eyes of the Egyptians, because Egyptians recognized that they would never behave like this. And the fact that the Jewish people are behaving in such a unique way, they said, you know what, take everything, take whatever you want. And after all, that helped fulfill the promise of Avinu Osam, V'acharichein Yetzer Rechosh Gadol. Afterwards, you're going to leave with great amount of wealth. And so a free person borrows. A slave mentality just takes. And that's the reason why we were becoming free through the process. Daber na, ein na elashem akasha. Daber is elashem kasha. So we go from kasha to bakasha. We go from something that's very strong, which is the language of daber, to the language of na, which is elashem bakasha. Kasha to bakasha, from strength and a very strong way of discussing matters to a supplication and a plea, which is a beautiful, delicate balance that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can intimate to the Jewish people. It's the equivalent of saying, please don't go near those tracks because, God forbid, there's a train nearby. And so there's something of empathy, and there's also a very good deal of persuasion that is emblematic in that phrase. And so when we think about this message, and then we think about the outcome, the Egyptians recognized they borrowed from us. You know, it's true that we loaned them these funds, but we did it because they were so gracious in the way that they presented themselves to us. And so maybe it also could have been that they recognized that we have better attorneys through Gavir Ben Psisa. We have better accountants. Also, maybe he had maybe he majored in accounting and then went for a law degree in tax. We don't have no idea. But the bottom line is that the Egyptians, you know, absconded, and they moved on. And that, my friends, is a powerful message in the way that the Jewish people have to hold themselves upright. And I think that there's one more clincher to this story, which I'm going to share now, that in summary, Gavir ben Psisa is described as a hedge of Shabanu, but really he was a great man. I think many of us think of ourselves as a hedge of Shabanu, that we are just a simple commoner. We're not a great person, you know, this great person, that great person, he lives there and she lives there. We don't see the greatness in ourselves. And sometimes, because we can't see the greatness in ourselves, we push ourselves down and we don't achieve great things. Every one of us is a Gavir ben Psisa. Every single one of us has the potential and the capability and the insight and the cleverness and the aptitude and the ability to present a case on behalf of the Jewish people, to present a case of defense, and to be filled with Jewish pride while doing so. And I give everyone the bracha that we should learn from Gavir ben Psisa, who himself referred to himself as a hedge of Shabanu, but really was a great person. And we have that tremendous opportunity and potential to be just as great. We just have to see the potential in ourselves and actualize it. This is Mordechai Plotzker wishing you the very best from Elizabeth, New Jersey. Bracha v'hatzlacha this coming week. And we should only be able to share in simchas and happy things together. All the best.
What's his name? Did you just say, what's his name? Gavir ben Psisa?
Gavir ben Psisa.
How do you spell the last name?
P-E-S-I-S-A.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Awesome. Have a great night.